Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Ron Chenow, can we just listen to a moment to John Kelly and begin to bring the current into the past? There's a lot more about the past I want to hear, but this was the general, now chief of staff of the White House, on Laura Ingraham's inaugural show on Fox on Monday, talking about what led to the Civil War.
The lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War. And men and women of good faith on both sides made their stand where their conscience had them make their stand.
Comments right there about the compromise and also the kind of eerie echoing of Donald Trump's comments after the Charlottesville mess about how good people on both sides. And there was more. Here was General Kelly, John Kelly, on Robert E. Lee.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state, which in 150 years ago was more important than country. It was always loyalty to state first back in those days.
John Kelly, Donald President Trump's chief of staff. Ron Chernow, against the backdrop of this magnificent work on Grant and the Civil War, so much in your mind, what are your thoughts on those comments?
Well, let's take the compromise comment first. And I have to say, you know, General Kelly, as four-star Marine general, yep, lieutenant general, and he actually has two master's degrees, one in strategic studies from Georgetown School of Foreign Service, mm-hmm, and the other from the National Defense University. So this is really someone, by virtue of his education and by virtue of his rank, you think would be intimately familiar with both the military and political aspects of the Civil War. You know, my reaction in terms of the compromise statement is that for 75 years, the country had been doing nothing but compromise.
Before the Civil War. Going
back to the Constitutional Convention, you know, we're always taught in school the big debate at the Constitutional Convention was between the big states and the small states, but James Madison said it was really between the northern and the southern states, and that it revolved around slavery, and a compromise was built into the Constitution where the slave trade was protected for 20 years. The South was allowed to count slaves as kind of three-fifths, mm-hmm, of the slave population, as if they were really citizens.
Partial people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then in 1820, we have the Missouri Compromise. Missouri enters as a slave state. Maine is a free state. 1850, we have yet another compromise. California enters as a free state, but the South gets a strengthened fugitive slave law. 1854, we get the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which allows the Kansas and Nebraska territories to decide for themselves if they want slavery, but that expands slavery beyond the line from the old Missouri Compromise. You know, and then, Tom, even in the weeks and months before Lincoln's inauguration, there were 13 senators who were frantically meeting, trying to craft constitutional amendments that would guarantee to the South that they would never interfere with slavery in their states. And then finally, you know, Lincoln had to tell them, he, in a direct quote, entertain no proposition for a compromise in regard to the extension of slavery. Lincoln had already, as had the Republican Party, made a compromise in terms of repeatedly reassuring the South that they could preserve slavery where it already existed, but they refused to allow it to expand and take over the country. So we had tried nothing but compromise for 75 years. And every one of those compromises that I mentioned, Tom, ended up simply inflaming and polarizing the situation more.
So what's embedded in this telling of the Civil War from General John Kelly, who's right there in the Oval Office, highly, you know, super high ranking in the Marine Corps, you know, advanced degrees. But we talk about narratives. There's something going on here with the American narrative that leaves him with making this observation.
I guess, you know, where that's coming from, because it's not coming from, you know, a direct knowledge of history. I guess it's a kind of, you know, desire to have compromise and civility in our contemporary political discourse. But if he's looking for, an example of failure of compromise in our history. He really turned to the wrong place, and I think, unfortunately, we have to call him out on it.
I mean, but he absolves the South. He says men and women of good faith on both sides. What do you make of that?
Let's talk about, Robert E. Lee a little bit, because mm-hmm. there's a rather sentimental tale that's always told that when the Civil War broke out, Lee felt that he had to go with his native state of Virginia. And so it's presented in this, again, very sentimental terms of his emotional attachment to his friends and his family and the state where he had grown up. I found as I got more deeply into the research about Robert E. Lee was that he was a real true believer when it came to the ideology of the Confederacy. He later said, "We had, I was satisfied, sacred principles to maintain and rights to defend, even if we perished in the endeavor." And even though he claimed to be critical of slavery in theory, let me just read you what he said about slavery. Mm-hmm. He said, "Slavery was a greater evil to the white man than to the black race. Blacks," and there he's talking about slaves, he said, "blacks are immeasurably better off here than in Africa, morally, socially, and physically." And here's the real kicker. "The painful discipline they are undergoing is necessary for their instruction as a race, and I hope will prepare and lead them to better things." And even after the Civil War in 1868, he signs a manifesto calling for the restoration of the kindness and humanity of the slave system. So this is not just simply someone who's, feeling loyal to his state.
Wait, did he want kindness and humanity, or did he want slavery back? I mean, not the...
What he was saying was that slavery represented kindness and humanity to the blacks, because it was part of the painful discipline necessary for their instruction. I mean, these are incredible stories, and these are things that tend to get papered over in terms of this, sentimental talk of reconciliation between North and South. And I think that we have to, see Lee accurately in his totality, that he was a strong believer in the basic principles of the Confederacy. And, in this Lost Cause school that started in the South after the Civil War, and this is still incorporated into many Southern textbooks, that the cause of the war was states' rights, not slavery. Well, if you go back to what was actually being said by the Confederacy at the time it was formed, Alexander Stephens, who was the vice president of the Confederacy, said that the cornerstone of the Confederacy was the notion that the black man was inferior to the white, that slavery was his natural state. And he said the Confederacy was the first country in history created on that great principle. In fact, James Longstreet, who was Robert E. Lee's main commander, mm-hmm. when later asked about this notion that the Civil War was about states' rights, Longstreet laughed and said, "Gee, that's funny. During the 4 years of the Civil War, I never heard anything but slavery mentioned as the reason for it." But this is kind of a rewriting of history, and unfortunately, this really misleading narrative about what happened is still with us. It's one of the reasons that we're still fighting with ourselves, because there are these two competing stories.